May the words of my lips and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So the second Sunday of Lent and our second covenant between God and our ancient ancestors of faith. Last week we heard about that promise. The kids reminded us of that promise to Noah and his family and to all creatures, the entire earth, never to destroy again. And today, we hear a promise made, not to the whole earth, but to just two people, to Abraham and to Sarah. The promise to make them ancestors of many people. But why these two? Why these two people? Why Abraham and Sarah? Out of all of Noah's descendants that now populated the world after the flood, why would God choose this specific couple to be the ancestors of nations? To be the foremother and forefather of the Jewish people. To be the spiritual ancestors of Christians and Muslims, too. What is it about them? What is it about Sarah and Abraham that is so captivating to God? Well, the Apostle Paul, who writes for us in the letters to the Romans today, Paul was not only a part of the early Christian movement, but he was also a devout and lifelong Jew. So he knew the story of Abraham and Sarah quite well. And he wants us to know that God chooses Abraham and Sarah because of their faith. That word was in that reading over and over. Did you hear it? Faith. God chooses Sarah and Abraham because of their faith. Paul writes, "The promise did not come to Abraham or to his descendants through the law, but through the righteousness of faith." Abraham and Sarah's faith was certainly quite impressive when we remember the whole story, right? Abraham and Sarah's faith and trust would lead them far away from their homeland, believing that God would give them a new home. Their faith would lend them the hospitality needed to entertain angels. Their faith gave them the humor that allowed them to imagine the impossible. And it was a faith that held back nothing from God, of not even their own son when God calls for him to be sacrificed. Even then, in that unbelievable dark moment, they trusted that God could make a way. It's pretty amazing, right? To think of that whole story and how time and again, Abraham and Sarah seem to trek through. It's inspiring, right? Kind of incredible. And if we're honest, it might also be a little bit daunting to look at the incredible deeds of our ancestors, right? But those moments of faith and trust in Sarah and Abraham's story, well, they're not the whole story. They're not the whole picture. The Apostle Paul wants to paint for us a very rosy and idealized vision of Abraham and Sarah today, but an honest look at Abraham and Sarah's story reveals that there's much more to these two than just an impressive model of faith. In fact, the story of how they get from barren wanderers to mother and father of God's people, there are an awful lot of moments of darkness and doubt and uncertainty in that story. Though God continually affirms and reaffirms the promise to them that God will protect them, that God will bring them a new home and offspring, that God will bless those who bless them and curse those who curse them, though God tells Sarah and Abraham this over and over and over again, those two, well, they don't always believe it. There's that time when they're passing through Egypt. You might remember this story. And they fear that the Pharaoh is going to treat them poorly. So Abraham, in his infinite wisdom, tells Pharaoh that his beautiful wife Sarah is actually his sister. And so if Pharaoh is interested in Sarah, she might enter his palace for a time, if you know what I mean. Not a great example of a very faithful and trustworthy husband, right? Right? Not a great example of someone who trusts God to take care of them. Thankfully, God does get dear Sarah out of that one. But then there's the whole thing with Hagar. Remember that part of the story? God reaffirms the promise to Abraham and Sarah many times that they will be parents. But still, they don't believe it. So shortly after God promises them that their descendants will be as numerous as the stars, Sarah suggests that Abraham sleep with his handmaid Hagar and have a child with her on behalf of Sarah. That way, they will finally have a descendant, and God's promise might be fulfilled. Rather than trust God, these two take it into their own hands. And of course, that story doesn't end very well. When Hagar does become pregnant, as they planned, Sarah treats her so harshly and so cruelly that she runs away into the wilderness and must be rescued by God. And after Sarah and Abraham's son Isaac is eventually born, Sarah becomes so jealous of Hagar's son that they send Hagar and Ishmael away to wander in the wilderness, nearly dying of thirst, before God intervenes again. Not always a very compassionate couple, Sarah and Abraham. And if passing Sarah off as his sister once wasn't bad enough, leave it to dear old Abraham to do it again. A second time, he passes Sarah off as his sister to another foreign ruler of another country. Sarah and Abraham repeatedly, throughout their whole story, laugh at God's promises. They laugh at God's promises as preposterous and implausible. And so we must wonder that if in today's story, when Abraham falls on his face, if he's falling in reverence or in utter disbelief. Could God really choose such flawed and doubtful people as the ancestors of our faith? When we look at the whole story, it doesn't always look very good, does it? Is this what faith really looks like? Perhaps faith isn't only trusting in God. It's also when you don't trust in God and fall on your face, and still God finds a way to pick you up and bring you to your feet again. Perhaps faith is not only trusting in God, it's also when you don't trust in God and you fall on your face, and still God finds a way to pick you up and set you back on your feet again. In our Romans reading, Paul assures us, in fact, when it comes to faith, the action is not all up to us. It's up to God. If faith were about doing the right things, Paul says, if it were about following the law and keeping all the rules and doing what we should, always trusting in God at every moment, if that's what faith was, then nobody's going to receive God's promise. Because no one, not even the mother and father of faith themselves, are just that good. Perhaps God made this promise to Sarah and Abraham not because they were special. Perhaps God made this promise to Sarah and Abraham because they were utterly ordinary. Because they were human. Because they had their moments of trusting God's promises and their moments of serious doubt. They had their times of compassion and their times of cruelty. Faith is not something that Abraham and Sarah generated themselves by being perfect or even really, really good. Faith is what God planted in the hearts of Sarah and Abraham when God chose them to be God's people. And Sarah and Abraham aren't the only ones. God continues to choose unlikely and utterly human cast of characters to be our ancestors in faith. Poor Peter, in our gospel reading, is another perfect example. Peter got that answer right, didn't he? Jesus asked, "Who am I?" And he said, "The Messiah." That was a right answer, but Jesus still was not too happy with Peter. All four of our gospels portray the character Peter, which is a little bit unique. And in most instances, Peter, he's a bit of an overeager disciple. He's the one to pipe up with an answer when everyone else is like, "Just be quiet and listen. Come on, Peter, put your hand down. Don't get us in trouble again." Peter is the one who wants to jump out on that water and thinks he's good enough to stand there on the water with Jesus, no problem. Peter is the one who, after the resurrection, When the disciples are out in a boat and they see Jesus far off on the shore, instead of rowing in nicely with all the other disciples, Peter strips naked, jumps in the water, and swims to shore as fast as he can. Peter is an eager disciple. And his eagerness to love and serve Jesus may well be something that we love and admire about Peter. But Peter's eagerness also usually gets him into a lot of trouble. Jesus commands his followers over and over again in the Gospel of Mark not to tell people about him, not to tell people who he is. And right here, Peter shows us why Jesus has to say this. Peter might be able to get the answer right. He might be able to say that Jesus is the Messiah, but Peter has no idea what that even means. He doesn't want Jesus' future to include suffering and rejection and death. And he himself certainly does not want to be involved with any cross-carrying. That doesn't sound very fun. The Messiah should be about glory and honor and power, Peter thinks. The Messiah should be the one that gets an army together and kicks the butts of the enemies of the Jewish people once and for all. That kind of might is what the Messiah is about. That's what Peter thinks. Not suffering. Not death. That's not the Messiah. Indeed, Peter will deny Jesus when he faces that suffering and death. And God knows that about Peter. God knows that when he's called to be a disciple. And God still takes this overeager, misunderstanding it all Peter and makes him the rock on which the church is built. God takes these unlikely people, like Peter and Abraham and Sarah, and makes them into God's people. A disciple who denies knowing Jesus becomes the rock of the church. A barren woman becomes the mother of nations. A doubtful man becomes the father of faith. It's like flint knapping. Have you heard of this craft? It's the process by which a stone is shaped into, say, a head for a hand axe or an arrowhead. A hard hammer stone is pounded into that more fragile rock, taking off the larger chunks. And then another stone is used to break off smaller shards until the tiny stone is sharp and the tool is just what it's supposed to be. God takes these dense stones, Peter, the rock, Abraham, Sarah, and shapes them into God's people. They are sturdy old stones, to be sure. Their stories tell us that. But flaws and cracks run through them, too. Luckily, God knows just how to deal with flaws and cracks. And we should take comfort in this because we are a chip off the old block, after all. We, too, are a people that are sometimes broken and flawed and cracked. But there's hope for us because there was hope for them. God's promise to Abraham and to Sarah is a promise to us. It's not the same promise to be ancestors of nations, but it's a promise that we can always trust in God. No matter how bleak the situation, no matter how impossible it looks, no matter what fears or doubts or cracks we might have, when we fall on our face in laughter or in disbelief, God can pick us back up and set us on the footing of faith again. Our hymn of the day today will remind us of that promise. I wish I had found this hymn we're about to sing last week because it's perfect for this Lenten season. Five verses for each of the five covenants we're going to read about, beginning with Noah's bow last week and continuing with Sarah's baby today. This song reminds us that each one of these signs is a sign not only of God's love for them, but of God's love for you. I think we just might have to sing a piece of it each week the rest of Lent. So as we sing today, remember these ancient signs of promise, these signs given to ancestors of faith, both strong and faithful, and weak and doubtful too. sure signs that we strong and faithful and weak and doubtful people can keep the faith for many years to come. Thanks be to God. Amen.